people forget these intersections. Mm. So this is a legitimate discussion.
Right.
Right? We are not discounting any one arm of the structure for health and health delivery. Indeed, sometimes, Reverend, share with us, you are actually supporting the health professionals.
Yes.
As a chaplain, let's say I'm a surgeon, and this has happened, or this is baffling me. Do I also need your support as a hospital chaplain?
Why not? You're also a human being. And particularly in interacting with the medical personnel, you get and catch some of them at their lowest moments. Because we see them as almost invincible. But I've seen doctors, medical personnel, traumatized at the loss of a patient. They cannot just explain it. The person was so dear to them, was going up and down. The numbers were improving. Everything was going well. And then they come the next day, the person is gone or takes a turn for the worse. Or you see the family completely helpless. Or you see people who are about your age. They do everything right according to the books. And something already has gone wrong. No intervention you are preferring to them works. And they are gone. And or you see people literally, doctor, do something. Doctor, do something. Begging you, crying, offering you the world. And you know it's out of your hands. So they themselves sometimes need an encouragement. Again, I know this doctor who, well, part of it is in David Carlson.
Okay.
Yeah. David Carlson
gifted
tells
hands.
Gifted hands.
Gifted hands.
He tells a story.
Later became a politician.
He tells the story of going to surgery with somebody and hearing the voice of the Almighty God saying, do this, do this, do this, do this. And he did it. And the person was cured. I experienced a similar thing where a doctor was being praised for healing somebody who was a footballer, American footballer. He had almost lost the hand and all of this. And he was able to fix it. And they were praising him. And he asked those who were praising him, the man's family and teammates, please, 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 stop the praising. Because if they come and ask me what I did to fix that man, so-called fixing him, and they probe my nose and see something, I may be in trouble.
Wow.
Because I combine the incombinable. Just as a Christian, in obedience to what I heard.
Okay.
I said, oh, okay. They said, please don't praise me. Don't praise me. So people have seen people almighty, and they come to their wit's end, and they're able to do something and say, this one, it's only God who helped me. Wow. It's only the divine who helped me.
Wow. 30 minutes past the hour two. And indeed, I'm a student of religion as well, earlier. So I know all the teleological arguments, all the arguments that show that there is a God.
Right.
There's a design, there's order, and so on and so forth. And there are also arguments against that.
Sure.
Okay? At a point, Sigmund Freud fought so hard and said he didn't believe. And then certain things brought certain things to his consciousness. What do you believe? When you withdraw or withhold consent for perhaps life-saving medical treatment on religious grounds, are you testing God? And there are many arguments to this. Are you testing God, or is your reliance on maybe medical science blasphemy or blasphemous? Uncle Fred, when I put this across, when somebody says, look, you need to give my child a transfusion, but by our faith, I cannot allow this. Is that person testing God or testing the doctors or just annoying everybody? What is that? And again, in your position, how do you look at this? Because my understanding is that as a hospital chaplain or even just a minister of the faith, you give support, counsel in an almost non-denominational manner.
Right.
You don't say this is Islam, this is Christianity, this is Buddhism. How do you deal with somebody who says, I will not permit this process. I will not take this vaccine. We had a problem with polio in the past in the continent, and some parts of Nigeria refused.
Yeah.
Right. How do you deal with these dilemmas?
First, if you have audience with the person,
okay,
it's a matter of integrity, trust, and honesty.
Okay.
Sometimes it's good to hear where people are coming from.
Hmm.
And if you know why they've taken that stance, hopefully when you educate them, they can believe that you are doing God's work.
Hmm.
If you think about the stick that was put in the water and the water became, let's say, drinkable.
Okay.
If you think about the spittle that opened somebody's eyes.
Hmm.
If you even think about the water that they didn't just drink, but the water turned to wine,
mm-hmm.
you see that some of these interventions, or raising the dead, some of these interventions were real. Eh? They are real. So people come to those things. You find out why they've come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And according to your faith, it can be done to you. But for me, that's why theology is important. We live in a fallen world.
Mm-hmm.
And that fallen world means everybody. One of the constant things is that we will suffer, we will die, we will resurrect one day.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's Methuselah, 999, 65 years, getting to 1,000, he mm-hmm. died. He never came back. Mm-hmm. He hasn't come back yet. Lazarus hasn't come back. So you let people know that whatever it is, you will die. Now, if that is your choice as an adult and you take that, well, the law permits you.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you mentioned the child one, and religion
mm-hmm.
with the parents
mm-hmm.
is one of the more difficult conflict of interest situations.
Refusing help, therapy, treatment,
yeah.
which sometimes may be life-saving. On behalf, you are giving the consent or withholding it
sure.
on behalf of a minor.
Of a minor.
Right. You say it's one of the most difficult.
Difficult conflict of law's interest.
Okay.
Because one, we are human beings, we live in a state. The state is the parent of all of us.
Okay.
Seeks our lives and our health. So then you, as a parent who gave birth to that child, you are also responsible for that child until that child becomes an adult to make certain decisions.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in Ghana, the Children's Act also gives the children some rights. And you, the parent, have a right.
Interesting.
Now, when life is at stake,
mm-hmm.
you, the parent, may say that you will not allow that life-saving intervention to be done. Now, some have persisted, and the child has died. Now, then becomes a matter of the law.
Right.
If they are able to prove that...
Of which you are also a servant.
Oh, yeah, of which I'm
an
also a servant.
Officer of the law.
Officer of the law.
All right.
If they are able to prove that this person could have been saved by this procedure,
mm-hmm.
giving the person blood transfusion, doing this and that and that, and you refuse, you were unreasonable, and this led to the death of the child, you can be criminally liable, even though it's your own child. Now, a way out in most modern states, and I guess I've not found it directly in Ghana,
mm-hmm.
is that the medical personnel and the social work people rush to the courts,
mm-hmm.
get an order to do this for the child.
Override
your parents'
sure. descent.
Sure.
Right.
And they take the liability.
If there's time. They'll go to court for a permit
yeah.
to save the life.
You save the life okay. of that child.
Right. In that instance, Reverend, would the parent be absolved from their initial with withdrawal or withholding of that consent? We went to court.
Yes.
The court allowed us. We came back.
Yeah.
We overrode your resistance, and we saved the child.
Yes.
Are you free of any encumbrance under the law?
Oh, yeah, you are free, because after all, you were trying to save the child's life, quote-unquote, by faith.
Okay.
And the child is an institution.
Okay.
The institution took a stance.
Okay.
God is court order.
Mm-hmm.
Enforced it, and the child is alive.
Okay.
So who do you blame?
Right.
You blame yourself, blame the medical personnel. Some of them are happy to be blamed.
Mm-hmm.
Once the child is alive. So some jurisdictions, that has become the standard for circumventing that okay. type of reasoning.
Right.
You see, even though when the child is gone, or when this thing is not done, it must be proven
mm-hmm.
that this would have been done. this could have saved the child's life, but you refused.
And you refused.
And you refused. So you are liable. And what do you say? You go to prison.
Am I not? Are you sending me to prison for serving and believing in the omnipotent God?
No. We are sending you to prison because you are a caretaker of a child who is not well.
Wow.
And the law says that the state seeks the welfare of all her citizens.
Right.
That's what the state is. That's why we are citizens of a country. In Romans 12:13,
it says,
we have, the state has authority over all of us. So if you steal, you go to prison. If you orchestrate somebody's death negligently, you go to prison. There are penalties for all of these things. So that is how the state sometimes intervenes to save that child, who someday will become somebody.
Wow.
Yeah, if you leave that child and another, excuse me, this is like the one you were mentioned about polio, mm-hmm.
yeah.
and they refuse all these children from being treated,
mm-hmm.
and later on in life, they carry these polio vaccine all throughout their lives. I mean, who do they blame? They blame their parents.
Wow.
They blame the state. But if I, as an adult, I decide not to take it, to get my medical intervention, I'm gone. Well, that's your choice.
Wow. 39 minutes past the hour of 2. This is just, you know, and regards and greetings to you. I call her my ladyship in red. But she's a justice of the Court of Appeal. There's an actual case involving blood transfusion. We'll deal with it subsequently in other programs with her and the lawyer at issue in that case, where the father, I believe, was convicted, but the sentence was, mediated or toned down because of various other reasons, okay? But there was a segment that says that the doctor has, like Reverend Dr. David has said, the right to overrule the parent's objection, and there are legal or medical-legal provisions for same, right? And if in court these things are substantiated, you could find yourself in trouble. And your religion, I guess, cannot protect you from that trouble.
No.
Okay. Let me give Reverend a breather and read a couple of your messages. Something inside so strong, noted by nature, regards to Reverend Digby. A true religion is about salvation, saving lives. Any religion, therefore, that denies anyone's salvation through blood transfusion, transplant or any medical procedure that is intended to save lives can't be defined as godly, as far as common sense is concerned. This is from Prosper in Dakuman. Thank you, Prosper. Somebody is asking, Reverend, is it wrong to pray to God for forgiveness for someone in a hospital? For instance, my uncle was admitted in the ICU unit of the hospital, and there were times I thought of praying for him in case he passed. We eventually prayed for him, but for survival of a surgery. He passed away. Is it wrong to have these thoughts? So somebody is not well and you are praying for forgiveness. I mentioned the last communion. We'll come to some of these things. I've done a lot of work in these areas, HIV and other things. You'd be amazed what families contend with.
Yeah.
The kind of conflict and contention that can prevent health delivery. This one says, noted by nature, I want to know if anyone can be sued as a result of denying any patient medical support based on religious beliefs that ends in the said patient losing their life. This is Prosper. Again, you can share yours, 055-1111-1997, Ultimate Health on Joy 99.7 FM. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, and X. Because of advancements. When we started radio, we were analog. But now, even pastors preach online.
That's right.
I don't know what religion says about that, but it's happening, and it is changing lives. We inform to transform.
Joy, 99.7 FM.
Reverend, so praying for somebody, right? And then sometimes, even quite recently, as I speak, I remember my mate, brother, Larry Otoo, lawyer. Yes. Larry Otoo, who we lost recently.
Yes.
And some discussions have been held, not specifically about him, but because in my line of work, you know, somebody says, it's okay, I'm tired, let me go home.
Yeah.
Somebody says, I don't want any more procedures, I am of this age, let me be. I handled a case in Kolebu surgery where a woman refused amputation.
Yeah.
Her two children were in favor of the amputation. Another was against. And if I remember her name rightly, I think Auntie Salome, years ago, said, I want to go to my maker whole.
Yeah.
Do not touch me with any implement, saw, or whatever. Eventually, consent was given by the children. The amputation was done. Sadly, we lost her due to other complications.
Right.
Okay. So, Rev, let's handle this praying for somebody, and then let's look at the competence and the capacity to give consent or withhold it. Right?
Okay.
So first, let's look at those who are saying, is it right to pray for somebody in church? And if you may, you could tie that in with last communion, right?
It is always right to pray for people.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are expressing our wish to God.
Okay.
Your mother, your father, your loved one is sick, is ill. What do you want? You want a person to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
That is what you tell the omnipotent, the omniscient God. But you must also understand that he, God, if I may use that term, God has the final say.
Okay.
So you pray to God. God is sovereign. He will do what he wants to do. The classic case of John 11, they may have prayed, and Jesus' friend Lazarus died. And when Jesus heard it, he went there and said, if you had come, he wouldn't have died.
Mm.
So it's almost late. Even his disciples, if I could just peep, they were actually making a mockery of him. What are you now going to do?
Mm.
But he, for his own purposes or for our faith, showed us that after that death, there can be a revival or resuscitation.
Right.
So it is not wrong.
Okay.
Now, but when people have come to a certain point themselves and they are capable of making a decision and they choose to make a decision, right or wrong. Now, this again is one of those conflicts of law. You love me, you want me to be alive. As they say, he who knows it, feels it.
Feels it.
So I know what I'm feeling, I know what I'm going through, mm-hmm. and I don't want to. It's not that I want to be killed. I just say, no more of these interventions.
Okay.
Let me go. Let God have his own way.
Right.
Whatever he wants to do, let him do it. And if the person dies, that's it. Nobody's going to live forever.
Right.
But if you override the person's will and a person dies, sometimes you, the one doing it, you may carry the guilt.
Okay.
That we did this. If you can live with it, or rationalize and say we did the best we can for the person.
Mm.
This was our mom, wanted to be alive, to see our grandchildren, to see our wedding, to see all of this thing. Now, these are very, very emotional and very difficult things that sometimes we have to help people with prayers, with confession, we see psychologists, psychiatrists, to deal with all these type of disturbances that come to them because of the decision that they made.
Mm-hmm.
I know my own senior pastor who died some last couple of years.
Mm.
They wanted to have a procedure on him. He said, I don't want it. His wife said, no, I'll sign for you. He said, look, I am fully alert, fully conscious of what
conscious
I'm doing.
And competent.
And competent. Nobody should sign anything against my will. And they left him. He said, I'm not afraid to die. I'll go. But I've seen cases where a man who was due for one of these going on having dialysis over and over and over, was about to sell his last plot of land and his last car. His friend went to him and said, my brother, what you are doing? You will leave your wife and family impecunious. What do you think you are going to achieve? So he said, what do you mean? He explained everything to him. He said, thank you, I get you. When the thing came again that he should go, he said, I am not going.
Right.
The wife said, you will die. He said, yes, I'll die. But should I die and leave you and my family penniless.
Because I've sold everything.
I've sold everything. I'm left with my our last plot and the last car. If I do that, I would not even sleep well in my grave.
Hmm.
He made that, they disagreed with him, but they saw the same. You see, sometimes our own feeling of helplessness, or we don't want to feel guilty. So if the person has the consciousness and can even bring you along with them while they're making this decision.
Mm.
And that man made that decision. And the wife, I would say, when I met her, she was eternally grateful that the husband made that bold decision.
He made a competent decision.
Competent decision.
Which he has the right to make legally. Right.
Legally.
Mentally,
sure.
He's assessed, he's sound.
Yes.
He says, leave me be. Yeah. And that is his right.
Yes.
And what we're saying is that the closure was somehow facilitated for the family.
Yeah, it was. It was
right.
Yes,
Reverend, I'm going to announce the phone lines again whilst you talk to us a bit about being prepared and ready for death.
Okay.
Sometimes when you are praying for somebody in that situation, some people think, "Hey, who are you serving? God or the devil?"
Yeah.
We are here to live, right?
Yes.
Now it seems like you are sending somebody off.
Off.
Right? In other jurisdictions, they have euthanasia, mercy killing. I'll get your thoughts on that. The phone lines, 030-221-6541. We're talking about religion, spirituality, and health on Ultimate Health, your ultimate guide to healthy living. This and every Sunday, 205 on Joy 99.7 FM. I am Note by nature. I'm here with Reverend Frederick. I call him Fred, but ever since several years ago, I found out he's also born in February.
All right.
Oh, he's my brother.
Okay.
He's my brother. He's on 9th February, right?
9th February.
That's my roommate's birthday, but I'm at 28th February.
Oh.
Aha.
You are the endangered species.
Borderline.
Borderline.
So let me announce the phone lines again and read a couple of messages which are flowing in thick and fast. 030-221-6541. Right. I saw somebody asking, good afternoon, Norte. The name of the doctor is, yes, I identify Ben Carson. Gifted hands.
Yeah. Ben Carson, yeah.
Both of us did, okay? The hard disk still works. So
right.
we remembered. If you have any message you can share, any testimony. But coming back to you, Reverend. So somebody is competent of mind,
yeah,
has made certain decisions, and has given consent or withheld consent competently, as they say in law.
Yeah.
Right. Family are battling over this. Somebody is selling something to come and give you maybe added quality of life or added time.
Yeah.
You have arrived at a competent decision. Sometimes we even work with what we call assisted disclosure.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've been told the full factual situation by the doctors.
Mm.
Some people withhold this from their family and so on and so forth. These are serious human dilemmas.
Yeah.
Is it wrong to prepare somebody? When I did HIV in Uganda, I found, you know, some of the things were amazing to me because at that time HIV was rife there.
Yeah.
But preparing people to disclosure, facilitated, assisted disclosure and all that, it was the norm. And people were helped and families prepared.
Yeah.
Doc, what do you say?
I think it's a good thing for people to know. You see, for instance, the HIV, at certain times, those initial stages, we knew that there was no form. Initially, there was no way anybody was going to survive from that if they moved from HIV to full-blown
AIDS.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is what you have. This is what you are dealing with. And if you cannot afford it, or even if you can afford it, there was nothing. So the person makes a decision. And you see this person suffering up and down, fever, blisters, all the resources gone. And what do you do? Do you want to continue like this?
Mm.
So in some of those things, as a chaplain, if you can sense that the person is hopeless because they don't know where they are going, they need to reconnect with their maker, if they have a faith tradition, you help them connect to that faith tradition, that in anything that is alive in this world, would die. Even trees, after a million years, they die. Okay, so any living thing would die. So you help them make their peace with their maker the best they can, and sometimes you just pray for them, Lord, help this your servant come home and come and rest with you. And I can tell you there are times that people have passed on and have gone to the room. We made high five because the suffering was enormous. It was palpable. You could feel it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that is, even though you didn't ask direct, that is when, even in some faith traditions, the last rites
last
come
rites,
in.
Last communion.
The priest comes last in, last communion, last rite. It's all a matter of making sure that whatever I need to do in order to go home safely with my maker, I do it. Some people, it's not in their tradition, so they make sure the water to cross the Jordan or whatever to meet the ancestors and all of that is done. If you had to, I'll tell you one of the fascinating ones that as an African I saw in America, it was incredible. There was a gypsy who their queen was about to die, and they knew it. The hospital had told them everything, and they were sure that she was going. They could read from their own whatever necromancy or whatever they did that she was going. But they insisted that they must be present in the ICU and light fire for the queen to go to their maker.
For the travel.
Otherwise, they would suffer untold and they all be wiped out. Now, cut a long story short, my dear.
This is in the U.S.
In the U.S.
Right.
They were pitched at the car park with their gypsy carriages and all those things and drinking their concoctions. So the chaplain came and called me, the chaplain general. You people from Africa have all these mysterious things. Can you go and help us out? So I walked into this situation. And when they saw me, they said, what are you doing here? And I told them who I was. And I asked them. And they said all the things that they wanted to do. And I prayed to God, Lord, help me. Let me help these people. So what are you doing? Why are you doing it? After they explained it, and the Lord just dropped something in my heart, as I would say, is it about light that will take the person to heaven, or is it about heat? They said, light. So how do you want to light it? You want to bring the candles and the firewood to this place? They said, yeah, that's what we have. And I said, oh, are you not sure that light, we can bring you flashlight that has even 10 bulbs.
So you are not, you are not challenging their belief.
No.
But you are now
a dynamic equivalent, educating them.
In psychology, we say you are rolling with the resistance.
Yeah.
It looks like you are dancing with them rather than confronting.
Oh, this one, even in some parts of Africa, we don't light bonfire anymore. We use flashlights. We have all of this. Wanted to. Then the chief said, let me go and consult my people. Let me go. Chaplain, wait for me. You are from Africa. Go with me. And I went there. I talked. I explained. That's not about heat.
Joy.
It's about light.
Light.
Now, I completely didn't tell them what the hospital was going to do to evacuate them. Because in the ICU with oxygen and all these things.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. And they were determined that the queen would not die. They would not let her go.
Without this
right. If they didn't do it, they would burn down the hospital. And I could tell that they were serious. Well, finally, we agreed that they could use a flashlight. We bought the flashlight for them. They did whatever they wanted to do, and their queen went to wherever she was supposed to be going. You see, so you don't take people's faith or exit lightly. If you can help them make peace, that's what the role of the chaplain, the role of the medical profession are to be. But in those instances, the person best qualified to do it, authorized to do it, maybe the chaplain, because of their training, their clinical experiences, and their theological background.
Great. Now, in this example, you're working with the people.
Yes.
You're not in direct confrontation or contention with them.
No.
So this is not adversarial law or rules.
No.
It's not black or white. We're looking for win-win.
Win-win.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the guys will say, we are coming, whether it's Lashibi or wherever, Obagbakucha.
Yeah.
We want to be in that morgue or whatever you call it.
Yes. Right.
Obagbakucha. And you say, well, this is the provision they have for you to do these things. Bring these few things, a few people, we give you this time to do it. And that is not confrontational.
It's not.
And it works.
Yeah.
And it gives closure.
That's it.
Let me just... quick words, we are almost out of time, but you know, now we're actually formulating an organ donation law.
Okay.
You can get somebody's kidney, somebody's eyes, somebody's this and that. We have assisted reproduction. we can take a sperm from here, that. What does religion say on these things? And why is it that some people feel, when these things are available, surrogacy and all these things, they believe doctors are playing God, or we are actually blaspheming?
Joy. It's still, the jury is still out there, okay, because there are people who feel strongly about that.
Okay.
But you see, it's an ongoing conversation.
Okay.
There's something on YouTube. A professor, doctor, a Jewish professor of mathematics, Dr. Ayan. If you haven't seen that video, he has probably fathered over 170 children now, and the way he does it is almost, I'll say, obscene.
So unethical.
Unethical.
Right.
Okay. Now he. I don't think I have the pleasure to even narrate
to give
it,
the details.
To give the details.
I think I've come across that story.
Right. Now, so life is sacrosanct. So if you just do it in a certain way, where it's like something, a commodity that you bought and they give you a shot and you have this and that, it borders on the flippant and the triviality.
Okay.
But we also know of people who are suffering because of their medical or the medical situation. You don't have a child, you need assisted help, and it can be done for you. Ultimately, 2 Corinthians 5 verse 10 tells me we would all appear before our Maker and give an account of what we've done in our body, whether it is good or bad. So sometimes we stand in judgment over people when we don't know what they are going through. You can tell them all that you want to tell them scientifically, theologically, and whatever, and leave them to make their decision. When they have made that decision, you as a person, you learn to support them or be with them. If you can't, just stay away. Finish. Because, as they say, everybody has the challenge that they are dealing with.
Right.
So some people have made themselves judges over this and that. Some people, what they are doing, it's what makes them feel that they are also human beings. And why do you take it away from them? So there's no straight answer to